Hello and very welcome to today's identity talk. Today we will talk about sexuality and ability, and my name is Helix and my preferred pronoun is Xier, spelled X-Y-E-R.
Hi, my name is Ant and my preferred pronouns are they and she.
Hello, I'm Ibi and my pronouns are he and him.
Hi, my name is Brianna. My preferred pronoun is she, please.
Hello, and very welcome, Brianna, for joining our show. You are our special guest today. I will ask you a few questions later on, but before, I'd like to point out the necessity of queer sexuality and disability, and for that I did a bit of research and just looking up for a few statistics. Well, the following statistics are a bit sad, just as a trigger warning. Within the LGBT plus community, nearly 40% of women have experienced domestic abuse in a relationship, compared to 1 in 4 women in general. So that's nearly twice the amount. And more than 35% of disabled women aren't out to their GP yet, or other healthcare professional community. And I also found an interesting quote by a 44-year-old gay woman, and she said, "As a disabled gay woman who uses a wheelchair, I experience double discrimination. People assume I'm not a sexual being. Further may they presume I must have profound learning disabilities as my legs don't work." And looking for men, 1 in 6, so that's 15%, have harmed themselves in the last year, compared to just 1 in 33 men in general who have ever harmed themselves. So that's nearly twice the amount. That's really horrible. And regarding to harming oneself, a gay man from Norway said in another story, "Several people I know cut themselves because they were harassed by the staff. There was a lot of negative talk about homosexual at the rehabilitation post. I was called in because I had bought white pants. I was asked why I had a homo label on my jacket. I was told that I walk in a gayish way, but I said it was because I had a limp. It was forced heteronormalization. Why couldn't I just decide to be heterosexual?" Regarding to that, 2/3 have experienced at least one incident of domestic abuse from a family member or partner since the age of 16, compared to 17% of men in general. And as World AIDS Day is on 1st of December, I looked up for a statistic regarding AIDS. 1 in 5 men have never been tested for any sexual transmitted infection, and 27% have never had an HIV test. Well, I hope I didn't upset you with those statistics, but it actually points out the necessity to talk about queer identity, queer sexuality, and disability in general. And before we will discuss with our guest today, I just want to point out that this topic is very intersectional. And we already had a few intersectional topics, like talking about black LGBT or LGBT of color. And it actually can be described by intersectionality, and that describes how social categories such as gender, race, ability, sexual orientation, or even age and religion overlap, and how they relate to oppression, domination, and discrimination. And I think it's really important to understand how those discrimination works, and even how they link each other, and when you are part of different communities. So, for example, regarding experiences, they are different, and we can ask ourselves what experience a white heterosexual man and compared to a white gay man or gay man of color. What experience a gay man compared to a gay man who's disabled, or what experience a white disabled woman, and what are the experience of a white disabled gay woman or to one, and what can we learn from a gay disabled woman of color? So I think these are all very important questions, and there are different answers regarding depending on who you ask. And the queer community, as well as a disabled or able community, is very diverse. And for example, I always thought, well, the queer community is left and greenies and so on, but in fact there are a lot of lefties and conservative people and POC and minority ethnic and Western people and people of faith and atheists and well-educated people and working class and young people and elderly people. And discussing about those intersectional topic, we have to keep in mind that everyone is unique and has its own opinion, and it's okay to make mistakes or to say something wrong, as long as we accept each other and as long as we expect our diversity. Well, that was a lot of talking now. I didn't body. And let's talk about ableism. What is it actually? And Juana, you're here. Tell us a bit about yourself.
So, I'm Rihanna. I study philosophy. And I love my subject. I love philosophy. And I'm also disabled, so I've got cerebral palsy. So this means that it affects my arms and my legs, but by no means my cognitive function. So I'm still able to think. I live alone. I study alone with help, so I have a scribe, but it's so cool because I love philosophy and my scribe is brilliant, so yeah. So my experience of being a disabled person is actually very good. Everybody helps me all the time, so my lecturers, my friend helped me. And my family also helped me a lot too. My family is awesome. So, but my favorite with what do you want to know? What kind of thing do you want me to elaborate on?
Well, I'd like to know, you're in a wheelchair, and I don't really know how your life is. So, for example, how is it for you to study at university? Do you have support? Are there other people you can meet with?
Oh, sorry. So I have support, and then I have support to tidy my bag. But I live alone, so I live in halls. I have a scribe to help me with out-of-college support, and a note-taker to help me inside. I have awesome friends who help me out, like, all the time. But apart from that, I'm living pretty independently with my proud of, like, I love living independently. I love my own space. And I have an awesome family who live in Leicester, so I sit down on the train. My experience of being disabled is actually pretty good at the university. It is very accessible. Very, very accessible. In fact, I can get everywhere in the university. So, which is perfect. It's fantastic. The philosophy department is fantastic too. They do awareness days, and they do diversity talks, and there's a lot of diversity acceptance as well, and I really feel part of a community there. It's really nice. So, yes, I don't know. I think ableism, as a dumb issue, though, is prominent throughout the world. Mm-hmm. I mean, I haven't experienced it because I've been very, very lucky. But I know other people who have, and that really should not happen. Like, people that thinking disabled people aren't good or aren't as worthy of them should not happen. And I think that some of my friends who would be disabled, like, one of them lived in London. She goes to university in London. And she's getting on fine, but she fought for disabled clubbing rights. So she fought for all disabled clubs to be accessible, which I thought was amazing. And then I... recently in my old school did a campaign about disability awareness, because although people are aware of disability, I think it's good to kind of create that awareness to, like, even more. And it was a really fun day. We got teachers in wheelchairs, and we got them to roll around and stuff. And it was really good because I did a talk on like alternative ability. It was really good. And what I said was fundamentally that you should treat disabled people and normal people, which is really important to home. Mm-hmm. Also, one thing that I would love to mention is that I've joined the debating society. Mm-hmm. And they we go to competitions, and they are so good. They always organize accessible rooms and stuff for me to stay in, so that I can go with them, which is really good. So overall, the philosophy department is fantastic. The debating society is fantastic. I've been having a wait of a time at university. So.
That's so great that you've had such a positive experience since coming to university. I mean, the statistics that we heard mm-hmm. previously were more than disheartening, but mm-hmm. it's just so great to know that you're having a good time and that you're living life and having a great university experience. Because, like you said before, I think that when we think of ableism, it's not just in terms of discrimination, but I think in the expectations of people, in that they can be, like, limited or reduced. And I think that you're the perfect example of, like, no, you're having a great time. Like, you're having such a good time with support, and it's just great to hear.
I think it's important to know that I have been very fortunate. There are people in other places that aren't as fortunate as me, and mm-hmm. this is partly why I do a lot of awareness, because I know mm-hmm. that I have put there is discrimination going on left, right and centre in the world. Like, we all know this, but it's difficult to... But because I've been so fortunate, I didn't want to fight it with other people and do my bit, so yes.
I think that's a really, really great and important thing, but I think something that we on the show keep coming back to is something that you've just mentioned, which is that it's important to remember the kind of circumstances that we as university students have. And I think what's really great with a lot of the things that you've highlighted, such as accessible rooms mm-hmm. and being able to move around campus, I think that's really great. And a lot of that comes from the fact that university is a bit more of an accessible space generally. And I don't just mean in terms of being a physically accessible space. It's usually a much safer space in general, and I think it's really great that we have that. So I think it's something that we've also touched on with regards to, for example, the show that we did on racism, where we realized that a lot of the issues that were raised are things that probably affect people more outside of these safe spaces and these safe bubbles. So it's really important to keep that in mind. And, you know, on that, I think what you highlighted earlier was really, really important to keep going.
To be honest, though, I think that obviously there's a few people that aren't mean, and I'm not going to say ableism does not exist, but it is getting a lot better. People are getting more educated and more aware of stuff, and people are... I know we heard them talking to the thing, but from a disabled person's point of view, things are getting a lot better. But maybe that's because of my I did say my bubble. But yeah. I mean, as well, it's important to remember that when things aren't acceptable, people are always around to help as well, which is really nice. So obviously it's important to know that it's not people's fault that things aren't acceptable. It's how it is. It shouldn't be that way. But people are willing to help, which is really nice. So yeah.
Yeah, thanks for that very first impression. We have a special guest. Hello again.
Hello.
And we already had a nice talk, and you brought a really nice view in. And just, I have to ask again, well, there are a lot of words for ableism, like ableism, disability, discrimination, or handicapism. Are there any words we can use or we shouldn't use at all? And another question, how would you describe disableism, and how would you describe ableism?
Okay.
Long question.
Let's take it one at a time, but whenever you're ready.
Yeah. Definitely. Okay. So, firstly, what word would I use? Okay, so let me just say that I'm very of the view that as long as people aren't offending, if they call disabled people anything, then that's okay. But generally, people in the disabled community don't like the word handicapped.
Okay.
I'm gonna be honest with you, I don't know why, but people don't like the word handicapped.
Yeah, thank you for that information. So that's something I can learn.
But in America, they use handicapped a lot. So I don't know. But I don't know whether that's the politically correct term. But, yeah. So.
Well, the other question is, how would you describe disability or ableism?
Okay, so disability is on the Oxford definition, it is a mental or physical impairment that limits a movement centers or activities. So that can include mental disabilities, physical disabilities, So it can really include things as wide as depression or anxiety to cerebral palsy, which I have, to epilepsy, so it's something that limits a person's movement or senses. The word ableism, I think it means something like living in an ableist society, so living in a society where everybody's able. So to be an ableist is to believe that, but that isn't right because disabled people are just as able as everybody else, so that is not the right concept. But I'm not 110% sure on that.
So kind of this understanding with ableism, yeah. this understanding that there are certain things that happen. For example, if a building was to be constructed which does not have any lifts in it, kind of building that on the assumption that everyone can use stairs.
Oh, okay.
Would kind of, I mean, that would in some ways fit in with this idea of ableism, which you've just described as well. So, you know, as you've said, you know, it's kind of creating a system or creating, creating this structure or this way of life that is in some way or another exclusionary. And that can go into language as well, which is really, and I think that's somewhere where us as a show that deals with LGBT issues, something like language comes very strongly into play.
Yeah, we're a talk show. We have to be really careful about the language that we use.
So, for instance, what you also just said a few minutes back about the use of the word handicapped and how within the UK disabled community, a lot of people don't like to use it. In the States, it seems to be more commonly used. There are also words that we also have within the LGBT community. So the use of the word queer, for instance, which is something that we constantly keep coming back to. And I'm just wondering, and I'd actually quite like to ask everyone here, something that often comes up as a very serious point of discussion is who kind of has the right to decide what words are acceptable and what words aren't. So to use a very specific example, I wouldn't feel comfortable if someone who isn't LGBT has a discussion on whether the word queer is appropriate or not. But at the same time, as someone who is, for example, cisgender and able-bodied, I wouldn't feel comfortable talking about what terms are appropriate for the trans community, for example, or what words are appropriate for physical disabilities, because I don't have physical disabilities. So where do we all stand on this? Do we think there's...
I don't know. There's definitely a thing in what you're saying. I mean, it's very difficult for an not for an able person to decide what a disabled person should be known as because of the simple fact that they're not disabled.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, I can understand that people do it as a mistake or something like that. That's completely cool. But generally, as you said, the LGBT community should decide what they want to be called, and we should respect that. And the same with the disabled community, we should respect what disabled people want to be called. But I'm very cautious, and I'm going to throw this out there, of, like, people being scared of approaching either the LGBT community or the disabled community because they're afraid of saying something wrong.
Right.
Have you ever experienced that?
Oh God, absolutely.
Yeah.
There's so much. There is a massive point of discussion where people feel like they're afraid to speak for fear that they might offend someone. And when someone points that out in a discussion, it makes the person who said something that could be construed as potentially offensive, it makes them feel attacked. So I know from my experience, I have friends who specifically either avoid issues that I feel very passionate about or don't like to talk about these things with me because they're scared that I might correct them on something. And it's not about anyone being on a pedestal or trying to nitpick or trying to make someone else look like they're trying to be offensive or trying to be stupid, but that's often how the conversation can go if you're trying to have one. So I think that when we are talking about who gets to decide what's offensive and why, I think we need to just have a very frank discussion where people are allowed to, where there is a space for people to make mistakes, for people to say things, but also there has to be dialogue. Someone has to be able to point out and say, well, don't you feel that by using that word that someone might feel uncomfortable in a social situation if you said that, that they felt that they might not be welcome or they might not be able to trust you. I know that one of our philosophy professors, Ian Kidd, we had a lecture earlier on in the term about creating hostile and social climates or chilly social climates, and it's about the minute sort of microaggressions that can occur within a situation. And obviously no one wants to be constantly checking themselves, constantly policing themselves, because it's exhausting, it's a lot of work. But if you're going to acknowledge the fact that you can't be checking your language, you can't be checking your behavior every second of the day, one, I think we should all acknowledge that we do live in a society which is imbalanced and that doesn't
isn't
fully
perfect.
It's not perfect. And the second thing is, if you're not going to be continually checking yourself all the time, if someone does call you out or say, I think that what you might be doing might not be the best, whether they are disabled or not, whether they're LGBT or not, it's about making people think. And I know that I personally had a friend, I know I'm going on a little bit, but I had a friend who was on the tube the other day, and there was a gay couple on the tube, and he saw the man next to him take a photo of the couple and send it to someone with sort of a derogatory remark. And he asked him, he said, why did you do that? And they had a discussion about it, and it wasn't an easy discussion to have. And afterwards he came and he spoke about it, and he said, I feel like I didn't do the right thing because I didn't correct the person. I didn't call them out in a way that was saying, you really shouldn't be doing that. That behavior is kind of, it's trying to humiliate someone. But I think that what you need to be able to have a discussion that isn't the discussion that you feel people should have, but the one that needs to be had anyway.
I totally agree with that. I would second that completely. You got what I would earn today on a stick.
Thanks. You can come back.
I think it's important to remember that that there are some people that are not aware of these issues, and that there are, and it's not really their fault.
Yeah, people aren't perfect.
It's the way that people are brought up or people may act or something, and they might not realise that they're doing anything wrong with...
Yeah, if society is inherently racist or ableist or misogynistic, people are going to be a product of that and exhibit some of those behaviours. But that doesn't mean that you can't talk about them with them.
But that's why I think awareness is so important. Yeah,
absolutely.
For all discrimination, I think awareness is so... Because once we can educate people... Then most people are nice people.
Yeah. Education is how you combat ignorance, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, but I think, of course, I would agree awareness is one point, but I think that only works when you got in touch already, but you somehow have to get in touch, and that means, for example, that when you announce an event that you say, well, for example, it's wheelchair accessible, or there are translators for sign language and so on, and do you think there are other things how to point out or how we can link different communities, for example, the disabled and LGBT community?
This isn't specifically to do with the LGBT community, but I'm just going to bring in the YouTube as perspective, because why not? So for those of you who watch videos on YouTube, so basically everybody, there's an option for closed captioning. So for people that are hard of hearing, there's an option where users can contribute captions to the videos.
Really?
And it's a really great way of, one, engaging with your audience, and two, a lot of the people I've noticed, a lot of the creators that make an effort to do this are LGBTQ+. One of my favourites is Riley J. Dennis, and she's a trans woman who talks about politics and feminism, and she always makes an effort to close caption her videos, always, and it's just really, really great. It does take some more effort, but I think that that shows a lot of thoughts and consideration and integrity on the part of the creator. So that's a really good way, I think, of linking the LGBTQ and the disabled community. And while we're here, before I came here, I was watching a YouTuber who has a sign channel. So she does music videos of her signing. There was a really good one that she did of Heathens by 21 Pilots, and it was just awesome. Just thought I'd put that out there.
I think what's really, really important, and why I think, you know, having discussions like this are so cool, but also so vital, is that sometimes we forget the very interconnected and intersectional nature of what these various identities are. So Helix, you at the beginning of the show pointed out how individual people, it's not just one part of an identity, you know, they have a gender, they have a sexuality, they have an ability or a disability, they have a race, an ethnicity, a religious affiliation, a political affiliation, and sometimes, and also an age. We often forget age altogether.
God, absolutely. Yes.
And when a lot of discussions, particularly in a young university setting, take place around LGBT rights, one of the go-to things to do is do things like direct campaigning, so petitions, mm-hmm. or doing a rally or some sort of, you know, student gathering. And sometimes, while very well-intentioned, these events sometimes leave out certain members mm-hmm. of the community. I know that the university generally is very accessible, but you can still unintentionally end up holding an event somewhere which might not be accessible. So last year we held a candlelight vigil after the Orlando shootings, and the original plan was to hold the vigil on one of the hills near the lake because it was very close to the Portland building. And while this was a good idea in theory, something that was pointed out to the organizers, including myself, was that students with accessibility issues might prefer somewhere that was flatter. And that wasn't something that many of us had actively thought about. And again, to point out, I would like to think we weren't being intentionally exclusionary, but it just wasn't something we were actively thinking about. So we ended up moving it to the Millennium Garden, which is behind the Law and Social Sciences building. And although it was a slightly longer distance from the Portland building, which is where the first part of our event happened, more people were able to show up because it was a flat area. Mm-hmm. And it's something which we often forget, because we have the privilege of not having to think about it.
Definitely.
But I think in some ways it's all the more important for us to therefore actively think about these issues. I'm very glad that someone who was a member of the network last year, instead of just not coming to the event, they contacted us and told us, and I really appreciate that. But I also think going forwards, my job now is to think about it more actively. So the first time I was ignorant about it, and it was pointed out to me, but now that I'm aware of it, it is now my job to engage with it. And I think that's kind of where another balance needs to be hit, where it's maybe not okay, but it's understandable that you don't always have all the information, you don't always have all the understanding, and that's fine, that's how society works, that's how you grow up with your circumstances. But I also think that when someone reaches out to you and gives you that information, you then do have to engage with it, and that is a responsibility that we carry as individuals.
It's not responsible to plead ignorance on things like this.
Of course it is, and I think it's so good how you think your own event for LGBT, but that is how it should be. That we obviously we shouldn't be able to make mistakes, but in an ideal world, far in the future, people to think about accessibility, right? Because obviously disabled students are living alone as well. It's not like they have like parents or anything to help them. And B, I don't want anybody with me, and I'm sure loads of other disabled people would. Obviously, as far as possible, obviously I do get help, but obviously I really want to be as independent as possible. So,
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think that I'm glad that somebody pointed it out, and, and I'm glad that you guys were so enjoyed at pointing it out. And I think it's amazing how the whole university thinks of everyone as well. Like, in the philosophy department, they are so amazing at incorporating me in whatever they do, even if it did help with wheelchairs or,
Just to strengthen your point, it's really important to support the common rights. For example, last week we discussed human rights and LGBT rights, and it's and there is an UN conference for disabled rights as well. And just because we, I started with all that very sad statistics, something brilliant I want to point out is that in June 2014, the White House held the first ever forum for LGBT and transgender people and disability issues, and that's just amazing that now people think of disabled LGBT rights as well. But
I think something that's very important also that has happened in recent years in particular is this understanding that LGBT isn't a disability, but that LGBT people can have disabilities.
Yes.
And there's a very distinct, there's a very specific distinction here, because for a very, very long time, medically speaking, being LGBT was considered a disability. It was either considered a mental or a physical, and in some countries both, it was considered a full-blown disability, and therefore there was a lot of stigma attached to it. And then once these two areas were made distinct and there was an understanding that being LGBT isn't a disability, there was also a very brief period where discussions about being LGBT and disabled didn't happen, because a lot of people in the LGBT community were so angry about how they used to be classified that they refused to have this discussion. So I think it's really great, and it's a good sign of progress that we've now reached a time where we make the distinction between identity and disability, but also this understanding that you can have both, that you can be someone who has a sexuality that isn't, you know, I hate to use this word, but that isn't quote unquote the majority. But so you can be LGBT and you can also have a disability, and this understanding that you can have both parts of that is really important.
There's one more issue that I would like to quickly bring up. Disabled people are normal people. It's important to know that disabled and LGBT people are normal, everyday people. And everybody's different in some ways. And it's important to respect that.
Absolutely. Thank you. I think it's that understanding that there is, like, it's differences, not normal versus not normal, but just different.
Yeah. Everybody is different, and I think that we should all afford people the same respect that you would afford anybody, because it's really interesting how as soon as people find out that there's an extra dimension to your identity, or an extra dimension to how you live your life and how you fit in to the society that we have, as soon as people figure that out or they find out something, it's like there's another layer. So I feel like as soon as you like get to know someone without thinking about whether they have a disability first, or what their sexuality is, or even what their political leanings are, what their background is, what their race is, once you get to know someone on a purely human level, it's so much easier.
I think that's...
And now to end that part, I have a question for all of us. And how can we open up the LGBT community and the disabled community just to raise awareness and get in touch with each other? Has someone any idea?
I think awareness is a very big issue. People need to be aware of how... that these do exist, and that we shouldn't be scared of people who are a bit different in inverted commas. think it really important that people meet new people and people interact and people don't feel scared.
I think one of the really important things to bear in mind here is that within a university setting, we do have some resources that we can make use of. So, for example, the LGBT community at the university has a network. The disabled students also have a network. And from a university perspective, something that could be very, very fruitful and something that hopefully we'll be doing more of going forward is having collaborations between the Disabled Students Network and the LGBT Network. And that is something that we have done. We have done several of them last year. We hope to continue to do so this year. And that's a really good point of call, because there are members, obviously because of their identity, who are part of both networks. And it's a really good space to start. But outside of university, I also think something that is very, very important and often gets overlooked, and I keep coming back to this because I'm such a huge fan of it, is things that are very easily attained, like films and books. And the reason I go back to these is because for a lot of us here at university, we are very interested and we actively discuss these things and we actively go and research about these things and we learn more. But that isn't always the case for a lot of people. They may not be actively looking to these things, and having things like there was a movie that we were talking about earlier in the studio. It's called Margarita with a Straw, and the film is about a bisexual woman of color who has cerebral palsy,
intersectional goals,
and her relationship with a blind woman of color. So it deals with a lot of different types of intersections, but most importantly, and something that we touched on earlier as well, is this idea that they're people, that we are not they, we are all people, and we have very, you know, very consciously normal needs and desires. And another one I keep going back to is the Young Avengers comic books, but that's more with mental disability. So there are a lot of characters there who are LGBT and have anxiety and have depression and kind of how they deal with that as well. So I would always say popular culture is great when you don't have active forms of organizing. Within the university, we do have active forms of organizing, so let's use both.
I think what's important as well is we consider people like Stephen Hawking, consider the Paralympics, consider films such as Alan Turing, who was the first Enigma. What he did was amazing. What they all do is amazing. And they have these difficulties in inverted commas. So we need to remember that when we are in the community.
Yeah, absolutely. And talking about linking up both communities, I just want to point out visibility as a point. So, Ibi, you already mentioned pop culture, but when I prepared that show, I was reading an article and that said, the prides, like Christopher Street Day and so on, they are always only for able people. I think that might be another show just to think about how can blind, wheelchair people, deaf people access like theaters, films, or even just as a normal pride to show the diversity within the LGBT community. Or Ibi, you pointed out age as an issue as well, and there's actually a fantastic video on Vimeo. It's called Beautiful by Night, and it's about old drag queens in New York, and that's really interesting because the representation of LGBT in films is always there, young people that are very fit and healthy and fit into that usual beauty ideal and so on, and that kind of breaks within and questions. What actually is beauty and what do we want to show?
I think that's a really good point, in that I think a lot of times people who create LGBT content are very focused on making it look very pretty. And part of that is this very, very shallow reason of, if it looks good, it sells.
Yeah, assimilating into normal mainstream culture, yeah. Basically.
And while that may have been a valid argument when the LGBT scene was first kicking off, now that being LGBT is already more mainstream, I think proper representation is the next step forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, more multidimensional characters. I think what a really good way of linking the two communities is just the internet, to be, for lack mm-hmm. of a better term. I mean, a lot of the content that we consume, a lot of the media that we read, comes from the internet. And it's such a great way of linking people together, be it through Facebook groups or Twitter pages or online communities. It's so great because you're not really seeing someone as a person, you're seeing them as a voice. And if you hear more narratives that, you know, you wouldn't normally hear, I think that's a great way of diversifying.
And it's all about awareness. So in university we are doing this, and then hopefully educated people will spread around the world and spread the message across to other parts of the community.
Absolutely. And I think using the kind of tools that we do have at our disposal on so many levels is really important. And it's also understanding what tools we do have. A lot of people might not realize this, but just the fact that, again, I'm using the example of the candlelight vigil that we held last year. That's a tool, that space that we have, mm-hmm. which is this flat space on campus, is in itself a resource, because that's an accessible space. You can hold meetings there, you can hold picnics there, you can meet people, you can engage with them. And I think it's sometimes important to understand that it doesn't have to be this grand thing like shutting down a whole city or doing a massive pride parade down a street, which a lot of people might not be even able to go to. But even having just this small one-on-one discussion is a very big step and a very big move in the right direction.
Yeah, thank you very much. I think that's a pretty good statement to close today's show. Thank you for listening, and thank you very much for being here.